This is the Meat Eater Podcast coming at you shirtless, severely bug bitten, and in my case, underwearless.
We hunt the Meat Eater Podcast.
You can't predict anything.
Giannis, zap him with your faraway elk bugle sound. I feel like you've gotten worse at it over the years. Hit it again. Because sometimes they stir my soul. You have gotten worse over the years. I just wanted to set the mood because you guys both, two of our three guests both got elk. Three of our three?
Two.
Who else got one?
I shot one last week.
Sweet. Congrats.
Hunting with the Elk Foundation. That's cheating.
Yeah. Yeah. It was weird. It was a good time.
It's pretty tough there still.
Yeah. It was, I mean, there was a day and a half we didn't see or hear elk.
Oh, okay.
And then there was a morning where we saw and heard a lot of elk.
And what was going on? What state were you in?
We were in Montana, eastern Montana. So hunting, just, you know, they were coming up river bottom and some farmland and catching them up, coming into the hills, picked them off. And, I mean, it was wild and crazy for about an hour and a half.
Calling them or getting out in front of them?
Got out in front of them and cow called them in. So there was 12 bulls bugling, so that just really got them to talk. It didn't actually get them to come over, but then I just kind of snuck in and was able to cow call them over the ridge to us.
Okay.
12 bulls bugling.
Yeah, it was. There was a big herd going through, and they were kind of navigating through.
You know, like what kind of big herd?
I mean, there was 100 elk, easy.
Really?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, there's a bunch of different bulls with the harems, you know, of six or seven.
Yeah, I got you.
And then my bull was kind of following up the rear, and I could hear him bugling off, and so we just waited till he got over out of sight, and then a cow called a couple times. He responded right away, and then I could tell he was coming our way, and I had found a pinch point that they all funneled through, and so we just waited there. Cow called one more time. He responded and crested the hill and came into 40 yards.
Really? Yeah. How far did he run after you hit him?
He went a little ways, so no excuses. Didn't put the perfect shot on him, so hit him and ended up watching him go over the ridge a little bit and then decided to back out for a couple hours and went back, and he was dead there. So he made it a couple hundred yards.
Yeah.
I kept it real in western Montana public land.
Were you using ONX?
Oh, yeah. Sharing waypoints. Checking out where water is. I got to look at intermittent streams to see where the water's going to be when I'm up on the mountain. Dip my little Nalgene in there. I use a Steripen and
that's smart.
Get water. I don't like to carry water around, so just check out those intermittent streams. Get down there, get a little drink.
Zach probably had to use ONX just to figure out, make sure he wasn't going from one private to the wrong private.
Yep, we were definitely navigating boundaries, making sure I was on the right places there, and then also just being able to mark. You know, we're sharing waypoints where to be at certain times.
What do you guys call that? This is kind of not off topic, but a little tangent here. But what do you get? Because I was talking to a friend of mine that was telling me about.
We're not done talking about elk hunting, are we?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. Definitely still an elk hunting. But he was telling me about how his guiding season was in Colorado. And he was saying, man, I had just the last week multiple, like a half dozen magic circles. Now, does that mean anything to you when someone said they were out?
It would depend on the context, man.
Out hunting elk.
Oh, okay.
And they got into like the magic circle.
No, I would say in that situation, I would say, would you happen to be referring to a honey hole?
Hmm.
Which I know what that
you
means.
Wouldn't ask him if there were any wizards involved.
Yeah. If he was hunting mushrooms, I would think he found a bunch of fairy rings.
Well, I'd forgotten that we used that term back when I used to guide there.
The
too.
Magic circle.
Yeah.
This sort means of like it means like a honey hole.
No.
Like a navel.
No.
Like a rut fest.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
Rut fest. Some people call it like I've heard it called a meatball.
Never heard that one.
I've heard it called a, what did the guy from Primos?
Will?
Jim Horn from those early Primos videos used to call it,
place where there is a lot of bugling elk activity.
Sure. But it's so rare and it's so special that when you find yourself all of a sudden
magic
in there.
Circle.
Yeah. And it's just like, holy shit, they're 360 degrees. They're screaming. I don't have to cow, yeah. I don't have to do anything. I can just stand here, and most likely one's going to come walking by me. And you feel like you're in a magic circle.
You know what? I'm going to start using it heavily.
Ball
I'm going to use it heavily. I'm going to use it for turks, and I'm going to use it for elk.
But that it just reminded me because it kind of sounded like you got yourself
into
that.
We found them. They were migrating up. And
no, what do you mean migrating? They're displaced by pressure? They're doing their daily, like going to get water and food and sleeping?
So they were down at night. They would come out to the fields, and then you could hear them all night, you know, down in the hay fields. And then they would migrate up top into the hills, and they'd go bed up on the north-facing slopes, and some on that property, some on the neighboring. But really what it was is we could hear them, and there was two predominant ridges and a big creek in the middle. And so we kind of slowly went up at dark or at first light, listened, and we could tell they were crossed. And when we got to that kind of cliff, we could just see them all moving up. So we had to dive down in the creek and go get in there, try to get ahead of them. Some had passed us at that point. And then I didn't call until I knew that last one was there. We just kept trying to sneak in, get on them. Ended up having a raghorn at like 50. Saw two really nice bulls fighting at about 110. Couldn't get around them. The wind was bad. Luckily, it was all coming down the drainage. And then the biggest bull I saw, we had him at 150, and we were pinned down just in some timber and big flat. Couldn't get across. So I just told the cameraman, I was like, hey, we can't do anything here. Just film him. Yep, they're filming that one for one of their Army F videos. Yep.
So you're going to be in it?
Yep. So I don't know if that one's going TV or online, but yeah, they were filming for that one. So we got a couple really nice bulls on camera. Just unfortunately, I'm an opportunist, and that, you know, I knew that bull coming. He was fired up and ready to go, and I found the pinch point that he was going to go. So we just waited, and we were ready for him.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a good hunt. It was fun, but I mean, before that, we had two bulls within 150, one within 100. You know, it's not, you know, it was tough hunting. They were kind of their normal patterns. They weren't really following the script there. So it was a lot of glassing, a lot of silent days, a couple days where we didn't see elk, and then we ended up finding where they were.
Do you have in your head, like the distance beyond which I will not shoot?
Absolutely. I kind of do like a hard stop, and I think with elk, it moves that distance should be shorter or closer. They're tough animals. Yeah, and
tough,
I mean,
man. They're not like, oh, you got me, and fall over.
Yeah. I mean, it varies from everyone else, but everything's got to be perfect regardless. But 50 yards on an elk's a poke. I mean, that's a good shot.
You know, yeah, I wound up having, in my head, like the non-debatable distance beyond which you will not.
And absolutely.
Just not have, be like, well, I'll wait and see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you know, they look big, man.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We were looking, the other day, we were looking at a spike standing there, and I'm like, man, you could, you know, lob an arrow over there. Yeah. Don't be range for it's like 72. And I'm like, well, a lot of people do, but that's a long distance for something that's aware of you.
Absolutely.
And he's already looking over.
Yeah. Especially when they're aware of you, man. We learned, you know, we talked about this on the podcast on Monday, but, you know, we got to review it because we filmed it, you know, but the bull that Steve shot really jumped a string, and it was because he was aware, right? He was tensed up because something was amiss.
Yep.
He was standing around long enough because he was still listening to a supposed cow over the hill, right? But like when he heard that arrow or the bow go off, man, he launched and
we got to, there's a frame. There's a frame where there's a tree that the arrow's passing in front of a ponderosa. And the frame happened to catch the blur of the arrow.
Okay.
So you know where the arrow is in its flight path?
Yeah.
And that thing is already on its way.
Yeah. Did you guys cow call him, stop him?
Well, he was coming into a cow call.
Oh, he was coming
in. But then, you know, Yanni was hiding and I was out front.
You mean after the shot?
No, before. So Eric and I were talking about this. My bull was moving parallel to me and I cow called him and he turned and looked. And, you know, we were wondering if that played into why I didn't hit exactly where I wanted to. I'm not using that as an excuse, but preferably,
I mean,
you
use it like as an equivalent of saying like, hey.
Yeah, exactly.
Which works really well too.
Yeah. Yep. But
then
it
they're
isn't
looking at you and
then they're like,
he had no idea I was there. He was looking forward. And then when I cow called, you can see he looks right over on film. And then when I shot, obviously you can hear the string. Regardless how quiet a bow is, they can hear something.
Yeah.
And so
do you feel like he jumped too?
He whirled a little bit. Absolutely. I mean, he turned, but I think I think what it was is I think he knew I was there when I cow called, and I think he wouldn't have. And if he would have stopped, I would have had, you know, an elk that had no idea.
If he would have stopped.
Yeah, if he would have stopped. And at that point, he's moving. You know, he's not moving fast, but he's moving to go up and follow these other elk.
And I shot last year at one that was just very slowly walking, thinking like, oh, there's no way. If I'm just tracking him, I touch off. It was like 20, 25 yards. There's no way that I won't just smoke him right where I'm aiming. And I didn't do it. I mean, I hit him way back.
Yeah.
You know, straight, like, just above the guts, no vitals.
Yeah. And I know, you know, Eric and I were talking about that, and not take his story, but he didn't cow call to stop. He was patient, and it paid off.
Well, I want to talk about that. Then I got to have you guys tell who you are.
First.
But no.
You want to hear the story first?
You can tell who you are, or you can just tell us about this, then tell you who you are.
I'll just tell the story to start.
And then you'll tell us who you are.
Yep.
So here's a story coming from a voice from the darkness, a lone voice from the blackness.
So yeah,
telling us an elk tale.
Last weekend, I was out elk hunting with my brother-in-law.
Can I stop you for a minute?
Yeah.
You used to guide.
Yes, I did.
Throw that in there because
I used to guide over by where Zach was out hunting with Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Eastern Montana.
Mostly elk.
Mule deer and elk, but. Yeah, I guided for a couple of seasons for elk hunting in September, all of September. That was a good time. Tiring, though, 7 days. 7 days when you got the long days where you're getting back to camp at 10, eating, going to bed at 11, get up at 5 a.m., and they're trying to serve you a big breakfast after you.
Tucker's yell.
Ate it. I'm like, no, I cannot eat. I just ate it. Stuffed myself at 11 o'clock.
Right.
I cannot eat. But, yeah, it tires you out.
You guys would do seven-day hunts?
Seven-day hunts over this type of country, Eastern Montana, the breaks type stuff, Yellowstone River breaks.
And you had hunters that could, no problem, make it through that? Or did you feel like they waned after halfway through?
Yeah, they could do it. When you're doing just one hunt, it's doable. But then you do one day of rest and then another hunt, 7 days. Then one day of rest, seven more days. Another day of rest, 7 days. And you're like, okay, I want to get behind the computer again. That was fun, but.
You're longing. When you start longing for your computer. If only to answer some emails. Yeah.
Those were the early days. But yeah, so.
So there you are.
I am. I get in the circle.
The circle of life, was it?
What is the circle?
Magic circle.
The circle of magic. Yeah, the magic circle.
The magic circle. So we
locate. But you're just hunting Joe Blow public land.
Yep.
Any Tom, Dick, and Harry.
Tons of people go up this trailhead. Tons of people. So yeah, everybody. That's why I went Thursday morning. I found them, and then we kind of bumped a little bit. We figured they went into this other basin, kind of worked around the other way, and sure enough, we figured they were in that basin, so we went and made the trek up there about 5 miles and did a locate Friday afternoon. They responded, so we're like, okay, well, let's set up our camp. We actually went a little further, went over the ridge, set up camp, came back, and by that time, we bugled from the road.
You guys on horseback or walking?
Walking.
Okay.
Yeah, by that time we were on the road. It is a road though, but
it's a gated road.
Yeah, and there was one above a bugle, and there's response above, response below in this big basin. I'm like, oh sweet, well, why don't you? I wanted my brother-in-law to get one, so I'm like, go up after that one. He's above the road. We don't really want to go down there. That would not be fun. So he starts working in. I start bugling. They wouldn't answer to a cow call, but they're answering to a bugle. So I'm like, well, stick with what's working.
Thinking that you're going to keep it talking, he's going to slip in there.
So I'll keep him talking from 400 yards, and you just slip in and see what you can get. We know he's probably got cows. He's chuckling. So he's got cows up there, but just slip in and get close. That's kind of our strategy. So I kept him bugling, although the one below me was more responsive to all my bugles. So I just sat there and bugled. Well, sure enough, he's working in. Here comes a bugle coming up out of the basin. I'm like, geez, this one's going to come right in. It must be a satellite bull, but he bugles, and I'm about 100 yards from him, and he somehow got by me without me seeing him. And anyway, he ended up coming around, and he probably heard me and got close enough to be watching where the sound was coming from and got nervous. But I kept bugling. My brother-in-law finally got close to that one. He said he got a 30-yard opportunity, but the bull came in, and the wind shifted a little bit and kind of walked off the other way. So we were so close to that one. But I've been bugling for like every 10 minutes I bugle, do locate bugle. And this one just keeps responding. So I've been bugling for like an hour and a half now. And this one just, you can tell he's like leaving his cows and like coming up halfway up the basin. And just, I'm like, geez, he's like moving. I think he's leaving his cows and coming up. So I knew, I went up to the head of the drainage and seen these wallows down there. So I went down to the wallows, like maybe he'll come up and get upset about this if I go into his bedroom and start bugling. So I bugle there. You can hear him responding. But then that's about the time I met up with my brother-in-law and we were talking about, he told me about his whole scoop getting close and everything. And while we're talking, I hear the bull bugling right in the wallows where I was. I'm like, oh, he's like leaving his cows. He's pretty fired up. So anyway, we keep walking and we get a little bit around the basin. I'm bugling again. He's responding. Now the other one, Ryan thought he spooked the other one, but he was still up there bugling right from the exact same spot. So I'm like, geez, go back there.
Circle,
get after that
circle
one.
Of life.
I'm going to go around here. We're in the circle. We're in the magic circle. Let's do this. So I just keep going around the basin on this road, and I'm bugling. He's responding. And I get a little further. He stops responding. I'm like, oh, man, what's going on? He hasn't responded to like three bugles at that point. I'm thinking, man, do I need to go down here? I'm just kind of slowly moving along this road.
What time is it now?
Now it's about 7 o'clock. We had started at like 4:30. Now it's about 7 o'clock. I've been bugling at this guy for 2.5 hours, and turns out he's about fed up, and he's going to see who the hell is in his
bed. But the wind's not blowing down to him?
It did when I was on that road. So anyway, yeah, it did kind of swirl down in there. The wind was still, it was actually kind of coming up still. You know, 6 o'clock, it's still coming up. 7, it starts to want to
drop. Oh, it's evening, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I was mixed up.
7 p.m.
So you're going
sorry.
That way, so yeah.
Yep, it was 4:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. then. So I'm just thinking, oh, what do I need to do? I bet that
And
bull.
So I can't believe that, not can't believe, but and you're half expecting other guys to show up because of all this racket.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, I potentially expected some guys to come up the road. Yeah. There's a lot of guys that go in there.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, well, he must have just went back to his cows, whatever. I'm just sitting there in the road thinking about what I should do. And all of a sudden I see Tan coming through. I'm like, what? Oh my gosh. He's like 60 yards away coming up the mountain just like pissed. And I had my rangefinder out earlier because I had that one bull come in. Well, I put my belt strap around when I had my rangefinder in my pocket. So I'm like doing one of those, like, oh, I did that again. Got to get my rangefinder out from underneath my belt strap. Oh my gosh, he's coming in. So I'm getting nervous at this point and I'm ranging. Okay, I get 20, 30, 40. Okay, this is close. Like, wow, I love hunting in the timber. This is actually doable. He could come into 30. So he's coming up. I get an arrow knocked, and by the time I get that arrow knocked, he's at like 30, and he stops, and I think he hears a little bit, and he just sits there. About 20 seconds, he's sitting there. And I'm just like, I usually am pretty calm being a guide and everything. I'm pretty calm and collected, but I was nervous at that point, and I started like, because I had seen his rack. I'm like, this is a monster. I'm just like, oh, no, he's going to win me. I felt the wind go right on the back of my neck. I'm like, oh, no, just like hyperventilating. No. But just, this is one of those situations. Usually it goes all wrong downhill, you know, something happens and they blow out. Everything went right here. I was so thankful that everything went right. So he turns and starts coming uphill. He kind of does a little number.
So you
like,
felt the wind on your neck and
yeah,
it kind of
went.
Switched,
it wasn't directly at him, but it was, this is a steep slope. So I think it was just floating over him and off to the side. So he turns and he starts going through these gaps, and I have a chance to draw. I'm like, okay, there's three gaps there. Please stop there. No, he doesn't stop. He's moving up. Stop in that one, please. No, he's like, oh my gosh, should I cow call? Should I cow call? No, don't do it. Don't do it. He doesn't know anything. He's pissed. And there's the third gap, and he stops. And I'm like, okay, that's 30. I like put it on his shoulder, and I'm like, gosh, no, I got to do further back. Get where that lung is really big, like mid-body, where that lung. Because I always shoot high, it seems like. So sure enough, shoot. Boom. He starts trotting off. I look at my binos, like, oh, yes, it's good. Like, blood starts forming, right, mid-body. Like, okay, that's a good shot. He's got to get his lungs. He trots about 40 yards. Goes over this little rise, and I hear crash, 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 crash. He made it, like, 40 yards in just, like, 6 seconds. He, boom, tumbled and was done. I'm like, yeah, I hadn't, like.
That's good, man.
Yes. I yelled out loud, you know. I couldn't believe it because I was like just a monster. I hadn't even come close to getting anything like that in public land archery. So turned out to be a huge, mature, fully mature bull. And I'm just stoked. 290 pounds of meat. came off of him. We got the meat processor, yeah. Just enormous to the point where we got all three quarters off and we still couldn't like get him flipped over because he's on a steep hillside.
Yeah.
We got him tied off and we couldn't like, geez, we just, it's like 1 a.m. We've been cutting on him for 4 hours. Just couldn't quite get him over even with one, all the other quarters off, guts out. Just big old massive bull.
All awesome. Right, man.
So awesome. And I just can't believe how it happened. Bugling this guy and he comes in like that. I haven't had an experience like that in a long time.
It's probably going to change your hunting tactics a little bit for next year, huh?
It's like, man, if you just sit back and get in the magic circle and start bugling.
Bugle some more.
They get snacked up, get in his bedroom and bugle some more. Get him fired up. Take a couple hours. So you never know what can happen while you're bugling.
So you never call cowed once?
We did try it in the beginning, and they just wouldn't respond to it. So, like, oh, well, I'm going to stick with the bugle.
He's like, yeah. Just ladies.
Yeah. He had ladies down there, I'm pretty sure. Oh. He was chuckling. And so, but yeah.
We should probably tell who you are now.
Okay, I can do that. My name's Eric Siegfried. I'm the founder of OnX.
Okay. Go ahead.
I'm Zach Sandow, so I'm the marketing coordinate project coordinator at OnX.
And you got Matt Seidel, product owner for OnX.
What's that mean?
I do a little bit of everything. So, I guess I kind of like to think of like the customer voice, but day-to-day operations is a lot of marketing strategy, go-to-market strategy,
okay,
and kind of product development.
So product owner.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a term that software companies use. So kind of overarching vision for the product.
Oh, I got you. I would imply, I would think that means that you see things through from beginning to end. Is that not true? Like, who's the owner of this?
Some things, yeah.
How long have all you guys been with OnX? In the year?
I've been here.
Lowest seniority.
Only been here, so I'm coming up on 3 years.
Okay.
Coming up on 3 years. I started right out of college as an intern and then just kind of worked my way up through. Yep.
That's cool, man.
Very cool. I'll be hitting 8 years in January.
Which is stretching back.
Yeah.
Stretching back to the
old days.
What are we at? Like 9 years now. 2009 was the first launch of the product in fall 2009.
How many years did you? Well, we'll talk about that in a minute. No, tell me now. How many years did you mess with it before it became a thing?
I had been messing with that GPS product for about a year. Kind of figured it out late 2008, and took me about a year to come up with figuring out how to get the data onto the chip, and that was the original Garmin product for Garmin.
So what? Okay, march me through this because let's step back in time. When I was a boy, and when I would look for, I would like scour for trapping permissions,
yep,
muskrat spots, whatever. I would go down. I'd go to the township, the various townships around where I lived in Western Michigan.
Michigan, okay.
So all the townships and all the counties. And I would go down there and get their tax record books, and they would let you photocopy pages for 50 cents a piece or whatever. Or you could just go, and you could also go and buy a township plat book. Mm-hmm. I would hand that to my father, and my father would work the phones. I would mark for him where I wanted to be, and he would get on the phone. He would look up the name, and he would work the phone until he found an inn.
That's awesome.
Right? Like, oh, you know, it's a guy. It turns out that's a guy from church's cousin. Yep. And he had a really good success rate. So, and that was something that, that was like a high level land information at the time. That was like the most granular sort of piece of information that was not easy to go get.
Yeah.
I mean, you had to really go.
That's advanced.
Passive people. Well, yeah, like someone who's like flippant and passive and half-assed about shit, they're not doing that.
Yeah.
So when did people first start having GPSs to walk around with?
The mapping GPSs come out in the early 2000s, 2002, 2003, where they actually could put a map on them, but in mid-90s remember the Garmins where you could just like see your location and see your little breadcrumb trail?
Yeah, the first one we touched was mid-90s, and it was my brother. He was working, he was doing a federal research project, and had one, but it was before they fine tuned them. They were still within 25 feet or something like that. And I remember wondering, I'm like, is this whole thing going to catch on? We would mess around, you know, but he had to like check it out and check it back in because it was federal property. But it didn't have any kind of mapping stuff over it.
Yeah, I remember using the ones where with the black and white screen, or black and gray screen, whatever, and you just like, you can mark your vehicle and then you can see where you walked and then you just walk back on. That's all you can see. There's no other data except this like gray background.
Yeah, exactly. It'd give you the arrow to point to a waypoint. You
know? Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't matter if it's through five valleys, it'll point you as a crow flies directly to it.
So what was like, what's the basic, my like plat book thing was just like a precursor to like, that's at a time if you wanted to find out land ownership stuff at a detailed level, particularly when it applied to private land.
Yep.
That was like the way to do it.
Yep.
And then like, but give me, hit me with like a rough sort of like GPS timeline. Like when, based on your guys' memory, when was it that that GPS became like, you know, early adopters were using them, and how did it come to be that the, what are the sort of year markers where all of a sudden you could get, you know, basic map, like basic geographical features on it, and then all the other overlays? Do you remember that at all?
Not so much, but I could kind of guess. I mean, early 2000, I bet it's starting to catch on with early adopters with like, oh, cool, at least I can mark where my truck is, and I can easily go out for a hike and figure out my way back as long as I like mark my truck. So lots of people probably have those early GPSs in like 2000. Hunters are starting to use them for that purpose. Then you get like the mapping GPSs where they actually can have like a topo map on it, coming in 2003, 2004. I'm not sure on that 100%.
Yeah, I think Garmin released a lot of their maps in 2008.
Yeah,
2008. Really God, I feel like it was earlier than that.
Their 24K topo maps.
24K topo, okay. But they had the 100K topo in like 2005, I think, in 2004 maybe. But some early adopters probably had it. But then like 2006, 2007. I remember getting my first like 100K. You got a new GPS with the color screen. 100K topo came with it nationwide.
Right.
And then it's like, oh, cool. That's pretty sweet. I can at least use the topography to figure out where I'm at. And so I'd use it for that. And then now they have these mapping GPSs. So then there's people making maps for them and kind of third parties making maps for the Garmins, and that's where I actually looked up online how to make a map for a Garmin GPS unit.
Like, why? What was going on? Like, what were you wondering about?
I had there's so many things that, so many times I'd been out there where I'm using a Forest Service map or a BLM map, and I don't quite know exactly where I'm at. I'm usually pretty good about figuring out I'm on this road or this road, but sometimes I'd take the wrong road, and I'd waste 2 hours of my day. Like, gosh, I just made a mistake, and I went down that ridge, and I should have gone down and stayed on this ridge, and I'd waste 2 hours of my day or whatever, and it's valuable time. So I had many experiences like that. So I was thinking of, I don't know why, let's see, late 2008, I had a certain experience where I was using Google Earth. There was one time I remember I had like studied it all from home. Like, okay, I looked at all the aerial imagery using Google Earth. I'm going to go try to hunt these elk where they're coming off private, going on to public. And I went out there, I'd studied it all, and I went out there and I still couldn't. There's like a fence and another fence. I'm like, gosh, I still don't know where the boundary is. Even though I'd done all this research at home, I need this with me out here. Well, I've got this Garmin with these maps. Why don't they have like boundary information on them? So that was probably an experience in 2007. So then I start Googling, learning a little bit more about it, and see the topo
map. You went and typed up how to make a
Garmin topo map. Yeah, I mean, and then there's this website that shows, here's how we make these topo maps. And all they didn't do was put the public land information underneath. All I had to do was figure out how to put the public land data underneath it. So I go to work. And
what were you doing for a living?
At that time, I graduated from mechanical engineering at Montana State in late 2006, and I was doing in Missoula. I'd moved to Missoula, Montana, and was doing HVAC design, heating, ventilation, and plumbing design for supermarkets.
There you go.
Yep. So that was more inspiring for me to try to start my own company.
Because and that I left, didn't you, that left you some brain space to start messing around with map problems?
In the evenings, I was just messing around. I started a few websites and was really passionate about helping people get outdoors and saw, had a vision for just like recreation information, like on Google Earth, like more widespread rather than having to get like one map here and there, just like nationwide recreation information. Just messing around. There's a website called recplan.com that I had a long time ago, and kmellers.com. And so I started a few websites, learned a lot about SEO.
What were some of the websites you started?
Recplan.com, like recreation plan.
Okay.
Not too many people know about these, but
KMLers.
Massive failures. But then
were you just using your own money for this stuff?
Yeah. I mean, it didn't take much to $10 to get a website domain name and $10 a month to host.
What were you hoping RecPlan was going to be?
It was the, I was like putting trailhead data and recreation site data on like Google Earth.
I got you. So you were in the, you were heading in the direction you went.
Yep.
You weren't like,
it's like 2007.
Wild. Yeah.
Yeah. It was all about, I was passionate about organizing recreation information. So then I figure out, oh, wow, I should make maps for these Garmin GPS units. You can do it. Here's, they're showing you how to do it right here.
Okay, when you do this, is it in partnership with, does it need to be in partnership with Garmin? Or are you just saying, like, here's a platform and you can produce a product that's usable on the platform? Or does it need to be that you need to be in bed with them in some way?
Nope, it didn't need to be. There's third party.
They're like making an app to run on Android.
Yep, they allowed third party mapping, yep, for their hardware. So there was instructions on how to do that online and went in, figured out how to get all the topo data from the government. They showed you how to do that. And then they just didn't have all, like, I had to figure out all the, where to get all the public lands data from the BLM and the Forest Service. So I went and did that. And those were the first maps. They only had the color-coded public land data underneath all that topo and roads and rivers and lakes and streams. That was the first map. Then right after I launched.
So what did you start with, though? Did you start with a whole damn state?
Started with, yeah, creating a whole state. Montana, Wyoming, Colorado were the first products I launched. Once I figured it all out, that was like mid-2009. Then I was able to crank out.
How many hours did you have into it by that point?
That was evenings. I probably had 600 hours into it. I mean, I did a lot with those other websites and messing around. I had a website, kmlers.com, and I would create. Well,
what was that one?
kmlers.com. KML file is the file you create for Google Earth. So I'd create these files for people for their hunting areas. I just do small pieces of boundaries.
Like boutique specific pieces.
Hey, I want to load this onto my GPS. So I go get this one specific hunting area for people and get the public land boundaries and send it to them to load onto their GPS and load into Google Earth.
As one-offs. You're doing this as one-offs. So. And like, what do you charge people for that?
Pretty much nothing. I mean, like $20 for that type of file, $30.
Really?
Yep. And I just was doing some prairie dog guiding at the time. That was early 2009. And
prairie dog guide by day?
I'd make make
visionary by night.
Prairie dog maps on Google Earth and send them prairie dog locations. So, yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So you're mapping out. So
mapping just random things and helping people get outdoors.
So people would go onto your website and place an order.
Yeah, I'd sell various things on the website. I had little products through buy through PayPal type thing.
Like what other kind of products? All digital products.
I would basically say custom. I'd make a product for their custom GPX file for GPS for your boundaries.
And are you getting any government people or anything, or is it mostly mostly hunters?
Yeah, that's mostly recreation. Then that was very few sales. I mean, we're talking just like MVP type style stuff where you're proving out that you can actually sell this thing to customers.
And at this time, how many other people are out messing around with putting property ownership information into GPS things? This is like a crowded field.
It's not a crowded field. There's a ton of guys. I later learned that people are like, in 2005, I was making these maps for my buddies, and they told me to make a business out of it, and I never did. So I've heard those stories. But yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there. Actually, government workers were making these maps, probably 2005 to 2009. They were making these maps.
And you were...
But nobody else was commercializing it. There's one other guy in North Dakota who was probably doing the... was like. So close in the exact same timeline. It's really funny. He was doing the exact same thing I was.
And were you compiling all of the layers or just putting the ownership layer on top of something?
I was getting all the topo data from the government and the waters.
So you're using like USGS geographical features, roads.
Yep. You had the water courses,
and you're just laying the ownership layer on it.
Yep. Underneath it.
And were you finding that all of that stuff was at that time, was all of that ownership information online, or you needed to go in and digitize like paper files? And
so that was, remember, that's just the public lands at the time. So there's, it's just going to say private, and this is BLM, this is Forest Service, is private.
I got you.
It was white, and you know, white color.
So you hadn't got into like the tax record materials yet.
Right.
You were just into like go or no go.
Yep, that's like late 2009.
It's binary, public, private. Yep. Oh, no, but you were doing BLM. Yeah,
it was basically, the concept was, here's a BLM map, but it's digital, so you could see your location on your BLM map or your Forest Service map. That was kind of the vision. Like, if I could just see my location on this BLM map, I'd have it made.
Yeah, I was telling a story the other day of me and one of my old girlfriends. One time we're hiking, we thought we were hiking in Montana because we're on the you know how like crazy the Bitterroot border is between the Idaho Panhandle.
Yeah,
you know, there's even a famous story where they sent some people in there to map out the range divide, and they got all screwed up, and that border is supposed to follow the range divide, but it veers wildly.
Yeah, wow.
So. We were up there for a few days backpacking around. At one point, we hit a lake, and there's a sign hanging on the lake. Like, you hit the trail, and there's a lake. And there's a sign saying what lake it was. Can't remember what lake it was now. And I'm, like, looking at my map. I'm like, by God, I don't know. This lake must be a brand-new lake. And eventually, I find it over in Idaho. And I'm like, we must have taken a wildly wrong turn at some point in time because we're not even in the state we started.
We found a new lake. I'm going to name it Steve Lake.
Yeah, we found it, and we had veered off into the wrong state, you know.
So, yeah, I got the – going to different – there's a lot of different sources. There's a nationwide public lands data set that you could get at the time. But then you can go to the state BLM offices. I found that these state BLM offices were a little more accurate than this nationwide public lands data set. So I'd go get Montana's BLM statewide public lands set, and that's what I used to – put underneath that topo map and create the Montana product. Colorado, Wyoming were the first three I launched with.
So is that okay? So when did you come up with a company name and stuff? Has that already happened or not happened yet?
Man, that probably hadn't happened. It's right as the time I'm creating this, I'm thinking, okay, how am I going to market this? And I had learned a lot over the failed websites. I learned a lot about search engine optimization. So I'm going to use Google I don't have to pay anything. I'm just going to make sure I show up when people search for hunting maps. I sure as hell want to be the first one that shows up. If it's like Montana hunting maps or Wyoming hunting maps, I want to be there. So that's when I came up with huntinggpsmaps.com. Stupid, simple. Just say what it is. Mm-hmm. Get fancy like these guys like to do.
were you married at that point?
I was, yep. I got married in 2007. So
was she buying into this whole thing?
Oh, man. I didn't make money for a whole year there. And her.
Well, only a year?
Yeah. That was 2008. I guided that year. And
Prairie Dogs?
Came back to the HVAC firm, and they're like, yeah, you can't. No, it was like fall guiding for elk. And
okay.
They're like, yeah, you can't really take a month off anymore like that. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to start my thing. I'm going to try to figure out a way to make some money online. And that's really what it was. Like, I just want to make like $50,000 a year online, not having to do much. And now here we are. Still working. A lot.
Something went wrong. Built a big old company and not still somehow working.
So then, yeah.
So huntinggpsmaps.com. Yep. And you come out with three products.
Yep. And then everyone's
and what year are we now?
This is right at September 2009.
Yep. And still no employees.
Still no employees. Yep.
And you got three states.
Three states and
right Montana, away, Colorado, and Wyoming. Why did you pick those states?
I knew the opportunity there was the most, and it was the most fitting product.
Is it the most? What do you mean?
Yeah, you know, Wyoming, there's so much opportunity for people to come into Wyoming and get tags. Well, I guess compared to, whitetail in the east, but I knew this was more western type focus where you got the BLM maps and Forest Service.
Yeah, because at the time you're thinking public.
Yeah,
you're thinking about public land. You're not thinking about
this is awesome. I can see where I'm at relative to public land boundaries, nice and easy. All I got to do is stay on this color coded piece of land and stay off the white, the private. It's easy. It makes it really easy.
And when you put it up for sale, you put it up for sale originally. Was it just micro SD cards? Or you're selling
micro SD cards and then a download version where you could download it.
That same year. That same year.
Yep. It was originally I created the download version. There was instructions on how to do that. Then I had to figure out how you could actually put it on an SD card and like lock it down to that device. So that was the big, when I realized, oh, wow, it's stupid simple. You just get this chip. I can sell them at retail and you plug it into a Garmin and it works. It's like, oh, wow, that can be a business. That makes it easy. So I had the micro SD cards and then you could do the download version where you load it into Garmin's map source at the time or Base Camp. And then you can download different areas.
Yeah, what did it used to be called for? It was Base Camp.
Map source.
Yeah.
And there was no such thing as a smartphone, so there was no such thing as an app yet, so you didn't need to think about that.
In 2009, they had iPhones.
Very first
I didn't have an iPhone.
And the iPads.
Flip phone.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really it wasn't at that time, you weren't thinking about putting it on a phone.
No, not at all. I had my flip phone and didn't even think about that. Didn't even know about iPhone.
And it wasn't something that could be, was DeLorme in the business back then? Who else was making handheld GPS?
Garmin, Lowrance was a big, Magellan. Remember them. They always wanted us to make products for them, but we could see the writing on the wall as far as like, nah, you guys don't have a lot of market, so we're not going to spend much time building maps for Magellan, Lowrance, DeLorme.
So you still, like when you go and throw the product up and you're selling the three states, no employees, you put it out there and what happens? You start selling them?
Start selling them $100. I'm taking phone calls. I'm working 16 hours a day. Like, oh, taking a phone call. Yeah, we'll make it. Make a sale, $100. Like, ching. This is awesome. Selling on the website. People are buying through PayPal on the website. It's like, oh, sweet.
Was it wildly seasonal?
It happened. Yeah, oh, yeah. I just launched it in the season. And I think that first season made about $60,000.
Well, there you go. You were 10 over gold.
Man. This is sweet. This is going to be big. I told my wife, this is like an idea that's going to be big. This is a $1 million idea.
Did you have a lot of money into it at that point?
No.
Like no loans and stuff?
Invest really much in marketing except free ways of marketing, search engine marketing. Did a little with Google AdWords, but not much at the time.
And your wife was like, at this point, she's like, believing it?
So...
Was it tense?
Starting to believe it.
Was it tense or not tense?
No, she's supportive. But it was a little tense with, I guess, other family members. Like, when are you going to get a real job? What are you going to do? Like, Jen's supporting you, basically.
Oh.
It's been about a year. I was going to be a firefighter. I was I went to firefighter prep thing. Just trying to figure out what I wanted to do.
Because it wasn't going to be HVAC.
It wasn't going to be HVAC. No.
God, so, I always feel like our families let us down. Like, where are the I never hear the story. We're like, yeah, my whole family's just going, yeah, go, Eric, you got this.
No, everybody's like, no, when are you going to get a real
go
job?
Go get a real job.
No, what? I got to counter that because I'll tell you what. My old man was a firm believer. My old man was a very firm believer. He said, he used to pound it into our heads when we were kids. He says, you're going to spend 1/3 of your life working. He's off by a fair bit. But he said you're gonna spend 1/3 of your life working. You have to find something that you want to do.
Yep.
Zero pressure ever about any benchmarks of any traditional benchmarks of what success might look like in terms of fiscal or financial reward. Ever. Pounded that in about you have to do something you want to do. And then even when I picked something that was like seemingly impossible from where I was, because I had never met a writer, super supportive. Good. I published like one thing in Field and Stream, and I'd walk into a bait shop, my old man, and be like, you guys know who you're talking to? Yeah, early on, man. So I can't say that I ever, like, you know, and definitely never got any heat from my wife. Right? Yeah. You need to be.
Nice.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're proving me wrong.
Have you had people beating you down when you were elk guiding? Were people calling you up, being like, "That's not a real job"?
Oh yeah,
really?
Oh yeah.
You're hearing it from your pop.
I My dad was pretty supportive, but I think we can go down a rabbit hole here. But I think it's because elk guiding was better than where I had been. And so he was like, all right, we're heading in the right direction, you know? But no, I remember stopping. My brother and I had a very similar experience where we were driving from Michigan. We used to always stop at my aunt and uncle's in Iowa and just stop overnight, you know, have dinner and keep driving the next day. And both of us had like the talk from our uncle that was just like,
from an uncle? The hell is he, what the hell does he care?
Sounds like that's fun, but when are you going to start, like, you know, being a member of your community and, you know.
From an uncle?
Yeah.
That's a meddling, that's a meddling uncle.
Pretty old school, conservative, you know.
Yeah. Is that partisan? Being a meddler about having a real job? That's not partisan. Doesn't matter.
So you're bringing that up because we were having a conversation the other day about what was it that we were deciding?
Like how some things become partisan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like why, like dietary restrictions are partisan.
Right. Dietary restrictions. That's right.
Like, yeah, gluten intolerance tends to strike people on the left side of the political spectrum.
Yeah.
It's like a weird, it's like a partisan disease. We've talked about that in the past. So no pressure. No one's like, when are you going to pull your life together? And you're like, oh, I have a feeling that there's a business to be made in doing this.
No, he is getting a little bit of pressure
from the in-laws. Oh, you are,
but not from your no, from your family, your immediate family.
Right? No.
Oh, it's coming from your in-laws.
Yeah, wife was a little.
Ooh, that'd be hard to bear. That'd be hard to deal with. The in-laws are hitting you through your wife or hitting you direct.
That's direct. Yeah.
Was it like? Was
there's
it
one
barbed?
Time I remember.
Was it barbed?
No, no.
But it was present.
What are you thinking about? What are you going to do? When are you going to? I don't know if it was when you're going to.
Well, right now I'm taking a call because I got a feeling this is $100 coming in.
It was before that. But yeah, thankfully. No, my wife was really supportive and she always has been. So that's part of the success.
Well, stick with her now.
Yep.
So first season, you're blown away. You sell $60,000 for the.
This is awesome. Take it down to Wholesale Sports, Shield in Billings, Montana.
Personally.
Yeah, like, hey, check this out, man. The, you know,
and you made a little GPS package. Counter. So you got a little package.
Like, hey, you should have these brochures here, and you could sell some more garments if you just sell it with this chip. Hunters would love it. And the guy's like, those guys got it. Like, oh, yeah.
This and you're doing awesome. This personally.
Yeah. Travel around.
Yeah,
travel
that's why I like all this American elbow grease shit, man.
Just go to the retail stores and talk to those guys. And
just walk in, go to the counter.
What do you guys think of this? Had it in like some really just all it was a little clamshell case, and I printed out on my printer and cut out the logo, hunting GPS maps, put some stickers.
Seriously, really?
Like stick it with Scotch tape. We still have some of the original. Mm-hmm. I'd sell them to guys like that. It'd be this little cutout.
So how many would a sporting goods store take?
So they did say they'd take six to start. Take six, like sweet.
And you're doing like traditional. Well, I don't even know what is traditional, like retail, wholesale, whatever markup.
Yeah, I did like 35 points.
You just kind of follow points. What's normal.
At the time I was selling them for 120. When I started, it was 120 a chip.
So you start out by just going to, but you're not getting national accounts. You're like going into selling to a specific
this is Missoula,
store.
Missoula, Montana. Like, hey, what do you guys think? They're like, oh, this is awesome.
I'll take six.
Yeah, I'll take six. Let's see how it works.
And they'd like pay you out of the cash register, right?
Yeah, but then they have some of the stores have the ability to get local goods. So they could just like, write a little invoice and pay you. I don't remember, it's more of a check, but not out of the cash register. But then went to Shields and Billings, and the guy's like, didn't you just stop by 2 weeks ago? I'm like, what are you talking about? The guy from North Dakota had come over.
Oh, you're kidding me.
And just 2 weeks before I went over there, like September 2009.
Have you ever gone to have a cup of coffee with that guy?
I've talked to him on the phone.
What's his take? Yeah.
He was just
what was the nature of the conversation?
That was a couple years in. It's finally like, hey, what do you think about working together a little bit more? And he's like, this is just a cash cow for me. I'm loving it.
He was saying it was a cash cow.
Yeah, he's got a cash cow. He's in his house, working from his house, and his family's helping him out. So, yeah, he was having a good time. And
were thinking of collaborating, and he said no.
Interesting.
Did he stay in the biz?
Yeah, he's still in the biz. Haven't heard much about him for a while, but Yeah, he's still in the biz.
And you called him to say, hey, man, let's...
Yeah. See if we could...
Like Wilbur and Orville Wright.
Point where we're thinking, well, should we just... He's doing some cool stuff. Let's just join up or see if we can buy him out. Have him join our team. See if he was interested in actually joining, like legit coming over to Missoula and being part of our team.
And was he was fine?
Yeah, he was good. North Dakota's happy with... He wasn't going to move, so I was like, I don't know if we can do it, like, long distance. Anyway, that was just an interesting anecdote. I'm like,
for sure,
are you kidding me?
Anecdote,
he launches at
man.
The exact same time. So, I mean, no, I wasn't here, but here, check this out. And the Shields guy ended up buying some from me and got it in there. And that's a great way to – that's how a lot of the sales started. It's just word of mouth, people coming to retail, him handing out a brochure. So,
what was the first time you had to go get a – what was the first employee you went and hired?
That was probably 2000. That was July 2010, right before the other season, right before the next fall season. Had a friend named Rob Hart who was kind of in and out of like his PhD, I believe, at the
grad
time.
School at UM.
What was he doing a PhD school. In?
Chemistry.
Chemistry. That was
and I went
one
to
of
school
Matt's
with
friends
him.
As
yeah.
well. So.
Oh, you were buddies with him?
Yeah.
Then Rob hires Matt just a couple of months later. That was beginning of 2011.
Oh, so you hired Rob
yep.
to do what?
Just operations and help with phone calls, customer service, basic
sales.
Business development, yeah. sales, operations.
And he bailed.
And I was going to focus on the product.
He bailed on his PhD plans?
Yep. He did. He was a little bit, there's something going on there and decided, yeah, I'll join you.
And he hired you?
Him and Eric did, yeah.
For what? So you're employee
marketing.
Number three?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So at that time, everything Eric just described. We were pretty much all doing full time. So we were on the phone. Yeah. I spent the first year on the phone, probably like 10 to 12 hours a day.
Customer service.
Yeah. And traveling, trade shows. I mean, we started expanding, driving around the country, stopping at every sporting goods store, just cold walking in, giving them a product demo, building tutorials, building the website.
So you're employee number three.
Yep. Employee number three. Yeah.
And you came in, it wasn't like you guys were all like, your job is this and my job is that. You're just mm-hmm. all doing all hands on deck.
Yeah, at that time it was pretty much all hands on deck. And I spent a lot of time the first year on the phone, just a lot of customer support. So
people being like, I bought this thing and it doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean.
Or I can't get it downloaded.
Yeah, the download product was a chore. Yeah. Getting people's antivirus software to accept a download, people didn't know how to download a file to their computer in 2011. They didn't know when they saved it, what folder it went to. They didn't know how to do every step.
Guys,
so
I remember.
Like,
yeah,
like
I
remember steps,
recent.
Right?
You think we were been doing this since we were kids, but it wasn't. It was only
it wasn't that long ago.
I remember pulling. Yeah. I remember being so angry.
Yeah,
and
I just hit download. Like, where'd it go?
Just on the old, just messing around on whatever the pre base camp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how do I unlock it? Because, you know, we wanted to lock
and then capacity
the maps.
Of your device.
Yep.
So you get something and spend all this time and then fill your unit up. And like, well, now I want to do another thing, man, but I don't want to have to go through that all again.
So we were on the phone all day. So then I was like, okay, I'm going to take screenshots of each step, write out written instructions. So then we had those like written tutorials you could like follow step by step. And then we'd be like, with the purchase, you know, they would get sent the email with those instructions. They'd call. We'd be like, did you read the instructions? They're like, no.
No,
so
you didn't
have to walk
them
through it. And then we got to like, I was like, okay, written's okay, but I'm going to make a video. So I made like do a video. Some people want to watch a video version, but it was just, we were trying to do what we thought was best and help the customers really was our focus. Everybody, the feedback was so great. We were just trying to find ways to make it easier for them to get the maps on their phone, and they were just spreading the word. It just kind of
and were you adding states?
So yeah, right. Yep. I mean, right away, people are like, "Hey, what about Utah? What about Oregon?
Idaho?
What about
you guys at Idaho early."
So by early 2010, I had like pretty much all the Western states done. I was just cranking them out.
But you didn't hit Alaska for quite a while,
right? No,
big file, a lot of topo.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, people weren't really asking too much about Alaska. Yeah.
So you would just kind of follow the demand.
Yep. Just kind of listen to what they're asking for. And you knew the 11 Western states were going to be the big ones with all the public land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So crank those out.
And at what point did you start getting, like, what point were national chains starting to buy the stuff?
Right in 2010, we found, I met a guy at a trade show early 2010 who had a connection with Wholesale Sports, or now
Sportsman's
Warehouse. It kind of went Sportsman's Wholesale, back to Sportsman's, you know. So it was Wholesale at the time, and he got me connected up there, and we got him in retail in mid-2010 in Wholesale Sports.
Oh, so that went fast.
Yeah, that's pretty quick. They had good feedback from their store in Missoula and some of the other stores that were able to get them locally. And so, yeah, they were all about it. We got pamphlets in Cabela's all over the West, and they're recommending it, and we're just trying to keep up.
And at this point, are other people – I know your buddy in North Dakota. What is it – like, what is the story of becoming sort of the dominant – Like, how did it come to be that you had, like, the dominant brand associated with the product? Because, I mean, is it getting more crowded, less crowded as in these years?
No, it's just, like, surrounding yourself with really smart people like Matt.
No, I'm not saying, like, how did you wind up, I don't know if you want to use the word win, but but what is going on at the time? Are there, like, competitors popping up and dropping off nonstop?
We're dominating the search results for one.
Okay.
For hunting maps.
So it wasn't going like the field wasn't becoming crowded.
No, it wasn't at all. And we're the ones getting into these retail stores nationwide. We 2012, I think we got into Cabela's.
Okay.
So we made the retail play, and then we did the search engine marketing, which those are the two plays that helped us dominate, getting into retail and dominate the search engine marketing.
So no one's going to catch you there.
Yeah, we really attacked the digital marketing side of it too, you know, building our email list and building up the website for SEO and, you know, having the customer newsletter, map updates, emails, all of that stuff, the tutorials. So we kind of attacked the brand side too and really reinvested, I would say most of the money back into the company.
2012, marketing really starts. Matt and Rob leading the marketing side, and I'm more on like product, working with the GIS team to get all the data. So we had Holly at that point. Right after hiring Matt, we had Holly, who's still with us. She's the GIS manager, so she's leading the GIS team, getting all this data and compiling it and making land ownership accurate. So expanding into other states.
Yeah, that was the next question is what were the paths toward expanding the product all around the country? And what was the path toward getting out of just public-private, but getting into, like, who owns what?
Yeah, right away in late 2009, right after I launched the product, then I see this Montana cadastral. Like, holy cow, this is awesome. Montana had the whole statewide data set digitally, and you just download it, all the land ownership data. So I'm like, oh, geez, just add that underneath.
Just publicly available.
November 2009, I had downloaded the Montana and figured out a way to shove that under as a layer as well. So you got private lands and public lands.
But there you get into the thing where here you're dealing with something that just changes constantly.
Yeah.
Because at first, like your initial products, like 20 years from now, that shit's going to be like basically right. Like
pretty cool.
Forest Service land tends to stay Forest Service land.
I was thinking, hey, this is cool. We can, with this type of product, instead of like a paper map, we can actually update this like every year. Everybody's going to want to update the hunting district. So we had hunting district boundaries in there. Yep. We started having all the walk-ins. Like, we need to update this every year. So we were in that mentality of like, this is cool.
Oh, because, so you saw it as something that was going to need.
It's going to be updated every year, especially the land ownership data. As soon as I saw that, then it's like, oh, sweet. I'll download it once a year, and right before hunting season, we'll update it.
What was the first point in time that someone came in, like one of the big players, one of the big, you know, GIS or GPS players or whatever? I mean, you had to have started getting people coming in trying to buy the company.
Yeah, man, that was even late 2011. Trimble Outdoors came by and made an offer.
I
remember Trimble.
So they had the Cabela's Recon app.
Yeah.
So they were in the app space back then. Yeah.
Yeah, Trimble Outdoors, late 2011. Yeah.
That was T-R-E-M-B-L-E.
T-R-I-M-B-L-E. Trimble. Remember that?
I know the name. Was that?
They had a great app. They were a little before the times. Like, it's almost like hunters hadn't adopted smartphones at the time. They did a great app out there, and just wrong timing. I don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A little too early.
Yeah.
So when someone wanted to come by, Like they come and make an offer on the company. Were they saying like, and you're going to come too? Or were they just wanting?
Yeah, no, it was.
And it wasn't?
You sign a 2-year employment agreement type thing.
And you were you considering it?
Yeah. But then it was like, well, that for that money, I'm seeing how much we're growing. Like each year, we'll be making that in 2 years, we'll be making that money. So why would I do that right now?
What was the early growth like in percentages?
It was crazy.
I mean, it has to be like
straight vertical
doubling,
line.
Doubling and tripling.
Yeah,
and
it's like quadrupling, tripling. Then it just goes down to like doubling every year after about 3 years, I'd say. But yeah, we're talking quadrupling, doubling in the first 3 years, and then it gets to doubling.
Yeah. As you sign those national accounts, Cabela's and Sportsman's, so you get that big jump the next year, and then you just keep getting more growth, but not that big 4X growth. So there's only so many sporting goods stores.
Yeah.
I was just thinking of the land ownership data.
Yeah, you know, you talk about the counties or
Montana. Montana has the statewide cadastral data set, so made it easy. Sweet, download the whole state, it's standardized. Then I'm like, okay, this is awesome. You got the plat data. You're basically putting your plat books statewide into the product. Super sweet. Let's go do that elsewhere. And I start looking around, and other states you can only go county by county, and sometimes they're charging like $10,000 to get their plat data to get that county. So it's like, okay,
who's charging that?
The county.
The county's charging $10,000 to get the data.
For what purpose? How's it not public data?
It's public, but for commercial use.
They knew it was valuable. I think oil and gas companies at the time were buying it.
Oh, to go knock on doors about leases.
There's other insurance companies that buy it. So
there's already a market price set. Yeah. Yep.
They knew it was valuable, and they figured they'd make some money on it, I guess. I don't know. Some were free. Some were $1,000. Some were $10,000.
So
I was like, oh, sweet. Well,
were you going and paying the ones that were $10,000 because you had to do it?
We wouldn't do $10,000, but we'd do $1,000. We'd do $500, and we'd go to Washington, I think.
Because this state's got, what, 83 counties or something?
56.
56 counties?
Yeah. A lot of them have like around 83 60 counties. To 80. Yeah, that's pretty typical.
So 5 or 6 years ago, you know, we'd get a lot of feedback. Why don't you have my county? And so a lot of it was, well, at that time we couldn't afford it. We had to prove out, you know, could we sell enough memberships in that state to reinvest the money to buy that last county or two that cost $10,000? Or some of the counties just don't even have it available, and that's still the case right now.
Or if they're more rural counties, they just still have, we got these plat books, but we don't have it digitized.
So did you have to get into the process of digitizing some of this stuff?
We never did. We would just expand to other states rather than spend time digitizing a county that wasn't digitized already.
So let's say I'm in Colorado. There's might be holes in it.
Yeah, there's. I don't know. Colorado probably still has one or two counties that maybe eastern Colorado,
southeast corner. There's a couple counties there that don't.
So if I'm down there and I go to look, and I might not find a landowner.
The landowner names. Yep.
Yeah.
You might have parcel boundaries, or you might not have. You just have public private. It just says private.
Huh.
Public camp.
And when people see that, are they pissed? They didn't get what they paid for?
Well, we try to make it clear. Like, here's our coverage map.
Okay.
You should know what you're getting before you buy it.
I got you.
But yeah, some people say, hey, you don't have my county. I'm like, oh, well, we'll work on it.
And 99% of the time, I don't really care who owns it. If it, like the personal.
No.
You know, right? I just want to know, like, same thing.
Not 99, but.
Like what you wanted to know back in the day. It's like, am I cool or am I not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was on Yanni's property the other day looking at his property. His name's up there. You got your name all updated.
No, my wife's pissed. And so for some reason, her name didn't come in there too. She's like, we bought this together.
Oh, yeah. They have these primary owner, secondary owner, and all these fields that we got to try to standardize. And the GIS team does all that and makes it all look good, which is, you wouldn't think about it, but county to county, it's different. And you got to like, standardize the attributes, and it's pretty cool stuff that they do. Really should
over 3,000 really cool counties. So,
yeah, so
crazy.
How full now? You've got all the states. Yep. Have you hit one for Hawaii?
Yeah.
Yep.
Is that a hot seller?
Not so much.
Not a hot seller, but
what's the hottest selling state and what's the shittiest selling state?
Matt knows all that.
Rhode Island.
They're not buying a lot. Cause
no.
In Rhode Island, they don't care who owns it.
Not buying a lot.
Who's hot? Colorado's got to be hotter than hot.
Top five, yeah. Montana.
Really?
Colorado. Wisconsin.
Wisconsin's hot.
Yeah.
Pennsylvania.
Well, there you're just talking hunter numbers.
Minnesota,
yeah.
So Minnesota, Pennsylvania. Yeah. There it's just there. Ohio. It's like, you just got it.
New York is really strong.
Is that right?
Oh. Yeah. So. Washington's pretty good.
Yep.
It's like top 10. It's 5 and 5 to the kind of Midwest East versus Western hunting.
Yeah, yeah. And then, so you filled out the whole country.
Yep.
Private, public. And then at this, okay, like let's talk about right now. Right now, you can use this to feed in the chronology. But okay, where are we in the chronology right now?
We're still early what days, year? Like 2011, 12.
Okay.
To fill out the whole
it's
nation?
All hunters.
So
buying this thing.
No.
Okay. So that's no. Okay. So what other market group is starting to get curious?
Even early on, we're talking to rural real estate agents. They're like, this has just changed the game for me. We're talking,
my realtor, I was just shopping for a home. My realtor, he runs on Expert Home.
Yeah.
Everywhere he goes, he's walking around with that thing on. He's like, oh, that's so-and-so. Here's your property line. We can go talk to that guy.
People are using it for work everywhere. Utility companies were calling, like, hey, we need this.
Firefighters.
Oil and gas companies, the firefighters, the urban and BLM firefighters, the Forest Service firefighters. They're needing to contact landowners sometimes to get permission to go be able to firefight on their land. So, like, this is a godsend. We can look them right up and get permission and get out there and get ahead of the fire. So all kinds of.
Game wardens.
Game wardens.
Right? Well, I'm sure, man.
They loved it.
Because it simplified life
For them. For them, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, that is like the vision. Like, nobody's done like a complete picture of land ownership for the United States. Like, keep it current, keep it accurate, keep it complete, and we're going to go do that. And that's going to be valuable to a lot of different people. And it is, although we have it branded under a hunt this whole time. We have a ton of people using it for other things.
But what are the percentages? I mean, predominantly.
We don't quite know that. I mean, yeah, definitely 90% hunters. And
does the fish market anything?
People are using it for fishing, but they likely find it through hunting, their other passion, and then they use it for fishing, and then they use it for their work or whatever. But they're maybe finding it through their hunting passion
or a friend referral. Yeah,
some people might just be a firefighter and they hear from other firefighters and they're not a hunter and they buy it.
What year was it when you got your first office?
That was 2011. Matt was working from his house
in Bozeman.
Yeah. In Bozeman, Holly was working from my house. Rob was working from his house. So, but then mid 2011, we got an office in Missoula. Same office. We expanded it, but we're in the same location.
Yeah, but that place.
Right now in Missoula. Yep. So then 2013 is a big milestone. So 2011, people are even saying, hey, can you get this on my iPhone? So like, oh, geez. Like, people are calling saying that. Like, let's start looking into that. So I start looking into that. And by 2013, we'd figured out, I was really passionate about like the Google Earth layering system. And I wanted that type of system in an app where you could turn on and off layers.
Got you.
And be able to customize your map.
Yeah.
And be able to make smart decisions based on turning on and off different data sets. I geek out on that stuff. I probably shouldn't have. But it worked out for people. People like that. I know hunters who are serious about getting out there and being successful. They're all about the layering. So figured out how to make that happen. And in July 2013, we launched the iOS app. Yep. I believe we called it OnX Hunt. At that time, we had rebranded our umbrella company to OnX and had the vision for like, hey, this is going to be useful for all these different markets. We got fishermen using it. We need an umbrella company that then you can have Hunt and all these other activities for apps underneath it. And view. So,
who came up with OnX?
We actually all sat down at a table. The whole company at the time was like 10 people, like late 2012.
Yep.
And we sat down and we're like, okay, so what do we want? We had all these ideas listed out. I still have the document.
A lot of brainstorming. Yeah.
A lot of brainstorming. It's like, what's a thing on a map that
X
gets you to
spot,
your spot, man? What's the spot? Like, we're helping people get to what the, get to their target. What is it? Well, X. X marks a spot, right? And what are we doing? We're helping people get there, and we put you on. We help put you on your target, on X, on X Maps.
On the X.
And then there goes huntinggpsmaps.com.
And then, we kept that up for two more, three.
Yeah, we kept that up for a while, but
keep the search engine.
SEO. I know, so
it's so funny, man. It's like such a clumsy name. I remember so many times just like talking to people. Like, yeah, it's GPS. Called like, yeah, huntingmapsgps.com. You know.
And we struggled a bit with the naming over the years. I'll admit that.
Hey, you know, it was probably like, it was probably
good thing.
But it was probably like the right thing, right? The right thing at the right time.
Huntinggpsmaps.com.
Yeah.
Was just the right thing at the right time for the search engine optimization.
Rode that wave. Yeah.
When you put those words in your URL, you get a lot of bonus from, you know, search engines. That's why I put them in there.
Right.
Hunting maps, GPS.
Well, as soon as the phone companies figure out the dang battery, there won't be any more GPS users, I feel like.
Yeah. I use the micro SDs a lot of situations because I can put lithiums. I can put three lithiums, lithium batteries, and a Garmin GPS and get days of use out of it.
Yep.
It's submersible. It can be floating around in the bilge water in the back of my boat.
I can save a map on the phone.
Pluck that thing out of there.
Put it in airplane mode and use it wherever for 4 days.
Yeah, but, but the thing is, in some conditions, phones are just kind of vulnerable, man. They're not like
that big really,
you're in salt water.
4 or 5 days on airplane mode.
Got to put it in airplane mode.
Yeah.
He runs airplane mode.
No, that's what I did last week, and I was getting 2 days?
On a
10.
Here's the other problem. 10. Yeah, okay.
Depends how often you're using the screen.
If you're out on like an 8 or 9 day trip, the other thing is you got to carry external batteries. When I can just put 6 lithium batteries in my backpack. I'm just, it's like, I've been through this and I've thought through it a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's listen, the user experience of the product is insurpassable on a smartphone.
Yeah.
But there are situations, like you look at it, it's like so nice, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's way ahead of
the aerial imagery. You got the big screen.
Everything beautiful. About it. It just looks, everything about it.
No.
Everything about it.
Yeah, what's nice about the big screen is you're finally like almost feeling like you're looking at an actual map. Like we still, for every shoot we do, we have a giant paper map because we like to lay it out and be able to look
visualize.
At it and be like, okay, this is everything at once. And that's one thing that, especially, I mean, I'm still rocking like a 62S Garmin, right? Teeny tiny screen compared to Steve's Oregon or Montana.
610.
So that was better, but now this is even better. You're like, I'm like finally feeling comfortable enough where I'm like, I'm getting enough context around right where I'm at that I'm like,
yeah.
Because the zoom function is not incremental. If you're doing it on a Garmin, it's you can like click up, right? Yeah. And you pass by the scale that you're after, and it's hard to
stop at the right.
Yeah, you kind of like can get where you sort of like have, you contextualize yourself.
But some of the detail fades away.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you can, on a smartphone, you can contextualize yourself in a broader contextual area than you can when you're using GPS. But I'm telling you, in terms of not quite knowing where you're going, having a big breadth of space available to you when you didn't plan ahead to like get all your downloads right, indestructibility, and then just being able to run batteries for a long time, there's still something to be said for a very small subset of individuals who are like people who are knocking around on very long trips in very remote areas.
Hanging on.
There's like, it still has a home. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
But you guys must know.
There'll be a lot of.
Right? I mean, the technology's coming, right? That where our phone will last a week.
No, because they won't do it. There's been exposés on this.
Yeah.
That's the week. The battery. This is some.
They could do
listen,
it now.
I'm not a conspiracy dude. You know me. You know me for years. I run the other direction from conspiracy theories.
Yes.
I don't believe in Bigfoot. Nothing. But people go get a new phone because their battery went to shit on them.
Mm-hmm.
That's valuable to phone companies.
Right.
I feel this is beyond like conspiracy. It is a conspiracy because a conspiracy is more than two people agreeing to do something.
I
think there's engineered obsolescence. There's engineered obsolescence in phone batteries.
But if you make them last like 7 days, they'll still probably after 2 years poop out on you.
That's true. Yeah. So. But then you're like, well, I still got 3 days on there. Yeah, my wife's phone, she can't get to through lunch.
Yeah.
Battery's dead.
Yeah.
But no, it's dialed. And the other thing about it is the layering system is really nice. Really nice. Being able to go toggle
good
through.
To hear.
But yep. You wind up seeing how your brain works because I spent so many years looking at USGS quadrangles. I can like that was always the map of choice for paper maps. When you're younger, starting out doing like expedition type stuff, it's like USGS quads. And you get to where there's something that happens when you get to where you've studied a landscape on a map. And you go to the actual landscape. And there's always a moment when you sit, when you hit the ground, and you have this moment of like, oh, so that's what this looks like? Mm-hmm. Right? And I don't know that you can get good enough at maps. I don't think you can ever get good enough at maps to look at those and then get to the place and not have a, oh, so that's what this is like feeling. Mm-hmm. I don't think that skill level exists. But what does happen over time is you get to where you can look at it, you can look at the ground in a general sense, and then they meld in your mind to become sort of one and the same. And once you get a sense of the visual scale and what you're looking at, you can look at a quad, and a quad really makes sense.
Yep.
Point being now, for me, if I'm looking at, if I'm on Onyx on the smartphone, and I look, like, I get more out of looking at the topo lines. I get more out of looking at that than I do the aerial imagery. The aerial imagery winds up being more confusing to me than the very detailed 40-foot ink.
You know, it's interesting.
The 40-foot lines.
Bring that up.
We had that happen the other day all the time.
We I think we shared Onyx, whether we actually shared waypoints or not, but we had multiple phones out with other hunters that we were running into because we were in a hard-to-draw unit, right? Uh-huh. Which is the weird thing about hard-to-draw units is that nobody's secretive. Everybody's like, yeah, I won't ever be back here again. Here's everything I know, right? Yeah, you look at all my waypoints. This is how you get
first
in there.
Guy running, first guy running who hasn't even tagged out yet, and he looks at me, he's like, so you want to know what's going on?
Heck yeah.
But it was interesting that everybody else that we ran into was, they would pull up and they were looking at imagery, and they weren't looking at maps. And I had to request three different times to be like, do you mind, hit that button a couple times.
Yeah.
I want to see what it looks like on the map, and see
because
where
it
the ridge
doesn't
is.
Make a lot of sense. It doesn't make a lot of sense unless you had that.
No,
what was that old
yellow and green blob?
Yeah, my brother, like years ago, he had that shit where he had the two maps and then that glass piece that you slid around and it gave it a three dimensional quality. You don't know what I'm talking about? You should look into that. You should make a little museum. I think at some point
you're
gonna
make a bat museum.
You're going to need to have the Onyx Museum. And it's going to be like the history of how hunters have used it. But you never seen those?
That's cool.
It's two maps and an eyepiece, a magnifying eyepiece on a stand. And you put your head down and look in there. And everything pops up into 3D.
Wow. No,
and it gives you a three-dimensional view.
Yeah, nice.
But when you're running this aerial imagery, you can drop 1,000 feet and that. There can be a 1,000-foot incline.
You definitely have the need for
that. Unless the sun was in the right position.
Yeah. I use the topo when I'm new to an area. Yeah, you got to see the contours and see what you're dealing with.
This is probably way off what you wanted to talk about, but no, this is all important stuff.
I was just thinking of like the early years, how I realized like, man, if I get my waypoints from my Garmin and put them on Google Earth, I can learn an area so much faster. Like, oh, wow, it's that one spot seems like it's so far, but all I got to do, I could come from this angle and like, wow, it's just like right there. But you think if you really learn all the intricacies from like this road comes over here and this trail comes in here, like, oh, wow.
Studying the
I can get there easily if I just go around and then I come up this trail here. Yep. Then I can get to that spot where that bull ran or whatever.
I think it's a much more sophisticated understanding. Here's the other thing. You look at like a steep slope. Now, you can look at all the aerial imagery in the world. You're not going to see little benches where elk are going to like to lay out.
But you can see parks.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's the okay.
You got to have the both.
Okay, here, yeah,
there's a park. There's the bench hybrid on the park. Oh, wow.
Hunting black-tailed deer when you're trying to find musk eggs, you will not find a musk egg on a topo map. Even if it's got the vegetation colored in, you'll never find musk eggs. You can find musk eggs all day long, just little open patches. Well, they're actually dead lakes. Musk egg patches are like extinct lakes, but you can find those all day long with aerial imagery. So it really depends. If I'm hunting up in like coastal rainforest and I had to switch, I'd be like, yeah, I don't give a shit about the elevation. I just want to know where the patches are, open patches. So, yeah.
Yep.
One doesn't replace the other. But do you get what I'm saying? I just want to make sure the point's clear on something. Do you get what I'm saying about that? No matter how much you look, do you remember when we flew into that prop lake hunting moose up on the north slope of the Brooks Range?
Mm-hmm.
I had it in my head exactly what that looked like. Like I could, in my mind, walk around. And then I landed on that lake. I'm like, that's what I've been looking at? Do you know what I'm saying? Does this resonate with you at all?
Yeah, but I'm guessing it's because you, like, your experiences put a picture into your head that you know, you just overlaid onto the map, right? Like, you're like, oh, we're going hunting moose. So you, who would think that we would land in a place where you're like the nearest moose habitat seems like it's miles and miles away. We're like up in the Alpine almost. Yet we were dropped there to hunt moose, right? So
no,
in your head, you
point.
Had a picture painted and it just didn't match up.
Yeah. Where's all the lily pads?
Totally. But yeah, the aha moments, man, of early GPS use and then of early Onyx use, it's just so many mind-blowing moments of being in the woods and just being like, oh, no shit. Like, these two parks are that close to each other where I could just, like, hop through the timber, like, 50 yards, and I'd be – and all of a sudden I'm connecting, you know, one park, and you, like, you realize that it's like, oh, it's probably actually, like, a very subtle old drainage, you know, that's just connected in parks. You know, you can actually just work it all the way up, you know?
Yeah,
just,
that kind of stuff. And the way, like, yeah, like, muskeg patches linked together.
Oh, and just exploring country. Just, like, I used to do the same thing. On Google Earth, I'd be like, park, never been there. Get that pin into my GPS and walk in a straight line there. And then I'd figure out like the easy way to get there. Right. But all of a sudden it was just like new country. Every time I went into the woods, new country.
We're down in, this is a little off topic. You know, it's only kind of off topic actually. We're down in South America in the jungle and these guys fish a lot of oxbow lakes and they kind of know, I mean, they've been, you know, hundreds of years, thousands of years, their family's been subsistence hunting and fishing in these areas and they fish these oxbow lakes. But when guys started going down with drones with cameras on them, Americans coming down with drones with cameras, and they take those drones up above the jungle canopy, they started finding oxbow lakes they didn't know were there. Well, off the river corridor.
Yep.
Because they're not on Google Earth, but they're sitting there looking at the monitor being like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It was like a lake we didn't know about.
We just got to walk a quarter mile that direction.
And if I had gone an extra 100 yards, we'd know about some other lake that no one's ever fished before.
Full of fish.
Yeah, so it's a funny realization.
Yeah, we have stories of landowners who are now, you know, they're the third generation or whatever, and they're like, well, Grandpa always told me that was our land right there, actually. It's BLM land. I better go take those no trespassing signs after. We have guys that are landowners that are really great like that.
No.
Like, I'll go take those signs off.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They had posted.
They didn't know.
And they didn't know.
It's like, thought it was
passed, sometimes passed it's like, down.
They hadn't noticed they weren't paying taxes on it. I guess because you're getting a big tax bill for a bunch of land. You just thought that's what it is.
Yeah.
Some of them are like, I didn't know we had that 40 acres right over there. I thought that was so-and-so's.
Yeah. Or they found land they didn't think. No. They thought it was the neighbors, and it was actually theirs.
Yeah,
that's what I'd like. I'd like to open that son bitch up and see my name written all over my stuff. I didn't know I owned that. This whole mountain. All right. So where are we in chronology? Go ahead.
Well, because fences, you know, in eastern Montana and everywhere around the West, fences were built 100 years ago, and they weren't built necessarily on the property lines, and so they just kind of became the communal property boundary. You can run your cattle up to here. I get the other side, and this is where it was. But
do you feel that your stuff is good enough? The other day we had a thing where the fence was lying to us. Okay. Is your stuff good enough where if something doesn't seem to make sense, would you personally, I'm not saying you're advising people to do this, but if you personally like, here's the fence, which I normally would have acted like, that's obviously the border.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, it's 70 yards off. Is the technology such, would you be like instinctively like, the fence is wrong, this is right?
There's a lot of cases. Most cases, that data is going to be more accurate than like a fence line. But there's enough cases where that data is a little bit shifted to 30 feet to 100 feet that I wouldn't do that.
So 30 to 100 feet could be just off.
But the angle of the property line, like if the fence, if you know the property line is going 90, you know, that way perpendicular, but the fence line's crooked, like, well, you know, the fence line's off, but as far as where that property line could be, it could, you know, the straight line, you know, it could be within 10 feet either way, you know,
you know,
but so I wouldn't shoot an animal 10 feet across a property line, but if the property line is going this way and you're at a 30 degree angle and you're like, oh, I can park and access this land, you know, because 70 yards, I would definitely do that.
So, yeah.
But we have a ton of stories of people like, I never knew where my pins were. I went out and went to the corner and started moving some dirt around, and boom, it was right there.
No kidding.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's like right on. Most of the time, it's right on.
Yep. Found a lot of pins.
But enough times, it can be 10 to 30 yards off. So I would say no.
You can walk right up on the pin. I mean, you're going to get within 5 or 10 feet. You know,
really? It's spot on for my four pins. I know that.
Is it really?
I'm going to check them.
Okay, back to the chronology a little bit. But I want to get to two things. I want to get to the future because, like, you're done now. The whole damn country. So there's that.
Yep.
Do you go global? What is it? And two, like, what happened where, and I know this because I read a press release, so it wasn't like I heard secret information.
Yeah.
You guys took on, like a partner.
Yeah.
In order to do something.
So, I mean,
you were kicking ass, just making it all go on your own. What happened?
We've got big visions to dominate the hunting market. We've got big visions to do a lot more in outdoor recreation and help more and more people get outdoors and have a great experience. So,
okay, give me a for instance, because I know that company guys always get where they won't want to tell you what you're talking about. Matter of fact, I pressured a company guy this morning and I got some info out of him. He was talking about testing new products, and I eventually squeezed out of him what it was. So what would be give me a for instance. I mean, is it sort of like in the same vein, or is it like you're going to come out with a boot line?
Definitely in the same vein of creating an awesome location experience and revolutionizing how mapping is done. So kind of going off yesterday, I wouldn't be surprised if we were able to finally show, like, this is definitely a public road, and this is private road.
But that's ooh, that winds up being like complicated because it's history, right? Like, user, like,
I'd like to I mean, we need to make that easier for hunters. That's one thing I don't like about the product. Like, I can scout everything else, but if I'm going to a new area, sometimes you can't quite determine if you can actually get to that piece, if that road goes to that public land, if it's actually not gated off or not.
But some people have been working on that, because I was amazed when I called, I think it's Montana DNRC, right, that controls the state lands, and they had, like, in each office, they had a person that I could talk to, and I had my gazetteer open, and we literally just went one after another, and the guy was like, no, 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 no. Unfortunately, it was all no's that day, but, like, he knew whether or not there was a...
He thought he knew. Because what we're finding now is people think they know, but they don't know.
Because it's just passed down. It's not actually looked up from the legal records.
So that's
some of it. That's that fight that we were talking about with the High Lonesome Ranch fight. Is he would say, oh, yeah, that's private road. But other people are like, no, man. It might have been gated since 1976, but it was illegitimately gated in 1976 or what have you.
Yeah. But this guy's working on behalf of the state that I was talking to.
Yeah, I got you.
But even then, they could have bad info.
Okay, so what else?
We'll work with those agencies, and we can actually say, here's our landlocked public lands. You have regional field offices where you do have those experts now. Tell us, is it or isn't it landlocked, and can you, and we talked about yesterday, like, the easements, go to look into those easements. And
so you might even be doing like a research function, because is it fair to say that, like, at a point what you've done is you've taken you haven't gone out and created information, you've taken information, compiled it, made it usable, searchable, approachable, purchasable.
Right. We have created GPS accurate complete picture of land ownership. That's one of the big things that we did, was take this public lands data, look at the private, we talked about that yesterday, look at the private parcel data, mesh them together, and is there a conflict? And usually those boundaries don't match up. The public lands data is like a little shifted off of the parcel data. So we, because the parcel data is done by county, we assume the parcel data is more accurate and then we'll match those boundaries up to that parcel data.
Got you.
And then we'll actually look through and look for these like timber companies that allow access. The GIS team will do all this research on Nature Conservancy, all these organizations that potentially might allow access, and they'll we've created this data set where it's like it highlights these places where you should potentially have access. Anything that's a government agency, county.
So you've gotten into like interpretation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we actually have this algorithm that goes through and pulls out all these owner names that we think likely give people access, including city governments, county, anything owned by a government, because you're a taxpayer, you may have a right to be on that. They might have regulations, but we're going to highlight that as here's city government, here's county government, here's BLM, here's Forest Service. You might have a right to be on that property.
Yeah, I remember one time going to a small government agency at the township level and pointing out a piece of land on a plat book. And I remember the township commissioner telling me, I can't tell you you can go there, but I can't tell you you can't go there.
Oh, brother.
We just talked about it earlier. We went.
Yeah.
We took that as a green light.
Just like it's illegal to corner cross. It's not illegal and it's not legal.
Yes, exactly. Anything else? Any other future things people ought to know about?
Oh man.
No one's on your guys' heels. No one's on your heels, right?
There's other apps out there.
Really?
Yeah.
Scary ones? Are they something really good that I should know about?
Nope.
Honestly, we're looking no matter what you're hunting, we want to have a product that will do something to help you improve your time in the field, make it more efficient. You know, a lot of folks are hunting 2 days. We don't want you wasting time, whether it's finding access, finding where your trail or where your tree stand is, your game cams, asking permission, or getting into these future endeavors and being able to pattern animals and organize your data or your experiences. So we're just looking to constantly improve people's days in the field.
You're not looking to get into a social app, are you?
No social app.
Social media type. Because you know these new things, I feel like it's not going to work. But these new things, like you go and you catch a fish and you make drop a pin, say I caught a fish here for public mm-hmm. consumption.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, those people got it all wrong.
Yeah. Hunters don't want to give away spots. They're not giving away spots.
People keep telling me, but I keep looking at it. There's a guy I work with that keeps sending me things about these things. But I'm like, man, I just like the guys I know about are going to be like, well, sure, I'll look at everybody else's shit. I'm not putting my stuff on here. But sure, if he wants to tell me that, that's his business.
Yes. But you do have your group. So there's a community aspect as far as like
very small
you have your group. That's what one thing we want to do is you can create your groups for certain things, certain activities. And imagine you have this 160-acre piece in Wisconsin or whatever, and you've got all your tree stand locations. You've got all your trail cam locations.
With your buddies.
You've got all your mm-hmm. trails that go in the way you want them to go into the tree stands. Mm-hmm. And you can say, this is my group. I got a new guy coming in. He just came in at midnight, but I need him to get to that tree stand in the dark. I'm going to share this data. And then I'm going to let him take his app like this, augmented reality style, and just make sure he stays on that trail when he's walking in to that tree stand.
Bob's
he doesn't even
here.
Have to do this.
Yeah, Bob's going to be here. Doug's going to be there. Come in this way.
Yep.
Look that direction.
Yep. Coordinate all that tree
would
stand
you just
activity.
Call that augmented reality?
Yep, augmented reality.
So that would be that there would be like it would look like a fake
like a, you see
video.
The line. Yeah.
Yep.
He's holding it up and he's seeing this line. All he has to do is like he doesn't know how to navigate.
He's looking at a photo before he's taking the photo through his lens mm-hmm. and there's a line.
Yep. There's a line. And he just has to like if he goes off it's not going to show the line anymore and he goes back there and then you can see the line. So he doesn't have to know how to navigate even a map.
Yeah.
This makes navigation totally stupid simple when you can do that. And it's like, okay, you're going to have to go out at 4 a.m. in the dark. I know you've never been there, but all you got to do is make sure you're staying on that line.
You're not going to answer this honestly, but I'm going to ask anyway. Any of you guys can answer this. Do you ever lay in bed at night and think, what have I done? Because what have I done? Because I'm slowly destroying woodsmanship.
When I think about those future visions of like, when I think of maps, I think, when our kids, when they think of maps, they're not going to think of like this paper map and they're not going to have that. But we're going to make navigation simple. It's going to be stupid simple. And I guess it's going to destroy woodsmanship. But I don't know. I think we can still pass that on to our kids. Like, okay, now I'm going to take your phone away from you. You make sure you can get back to the truck.
Because in case there's an apocalyptic scenario, yeah, you might need to know how to do this. The other day I was out, when I was out on Yanni's property, looking around. We're just looking around for red squirrels, and I had my boy with me. And I'm trying to figure out, you know, Yanni's like his, you know, his vast acreage, right? And my kids get annoyed. They're old enough now to know when you're paying attention to them or not paying attention to them. And he was registering some confusion because here we are, we're out looking for pine squirrels, but Dad's dicking with his phone. And I keep him like, he's like looking at me, and I'm keep like, listen, I'll just, you know, try to figure out, I don't want to stray over on the neighbor's place, you know, and I've never been up there before. And he was kind of having like, are we doing this or not doing it? Like, what are you doing work? What is it? You know? And it maybe like I had this like funny feeling that I wouldn't have had in mm-hmm. another situation. But again, there I am choosing to do it. And like, you know, you're going to go in that direction, but I am aware of, there's a lot being gained. There's a lot being gained, but there's always something being lost. But then here's mm-hmm. the other part, the flip side. When I look at it, the flip side is, I like to have more information because it increases my understanding of the natural world. We use fish finders. There's a point in time, I've even heard people say, oh my God, you guys and your fish finders. Okay. When we first bought a place in Southeast Alaska, a fish shack, we were using old nautical charts, which gave you really, it had just basically like soundings. Okay. And my understanding of the contours of the surrounding ocean, what worked and didn't work fishing, was based on just these really shitty little sounding marks. So later, when technology came in, and we started getting, basically there we use, I don't know if this is something you guys are ever going to get into, like good marine chart, you know, marine mm-hmm. charts. There's no ownership yep. issue, but like great marine charts on a GPS unit that have like all the bathymetric data, mm-hmm. all of a sudden you're like, oh, that's why there's halibut here. Or here would be a great place to go and try to catch a yellow eye.
Yep.
Or I bet you salmon come pinching through here when they're moving here to there. Mm-hmm. So the old timer will be like, oh, you whatever can't, you know, this and that, and you cheating, it's a big crutch. But you'd also be like, but listen, I now have this like much more nuanced understanding of like what's going on, and things that used to seem mysterious and strange and like shit luck now kind of makes mm-hmm. sense to me.
Yep.
And I understand what the ocean does now better. Mm-hmm. So is it that I lost something or did I gain something through technology? Right? I don't know the answer.
I do. You gain something through technology.
And I think the argument against, because I heard it too, as soon as I got my GPS, and I think I was the first one in hunting camp to have one. None of the other guides did. And yeah, I just got shit about, you know, cheating, this, that, and the other. But what I realized quickly is that, like, once you located that new park and you went to that new park two or three times using your GPS, the next time you don't bring it out again. And so then mm-hmm. you're, you know, learning it all, you know, taking in the trail and mm-hmm. the surrounding topography and the, you know, maybe the tree you didn't notice earlier when you were looking down at your GPS that is a tree that you can sort of remember your trail yep. by. But like eventually you still come to the same understanding of that landscape.
Yeah.
But it's just a little bit faster. And I don't know if yep. that necessarily takes away from woodsmanship skills.
And it kind of makes you expand. It helps you jump outside of your immediate comfort zone and gives you the confidence to go check out new places, which add to your understanding and yep. appreciation for natural mm-hmm. yep. environments.
What it doesn't do for people, and this is going to probably stay the same for a long time, is it doesn't increase the stamina of your legs and make you want to walk any farther. And so, you know, like that's the big thing that gets more people into the woods deeper. So no, yeah. no matter how much you can know and how much it supposedly opens up, like
still got to walk.
You still got to walk.
They're there. Working on a product, right?
But a lot of people probably used to just be like, "This is my spot, and this is my yes. spot. That's all I do because yep. I know this spot.
I know."
And then now someone sells that spot.
You expand your horizon and be like, "Oh, I'm confident now to actually go."
It's
try
opened
new
up a
things.
Lot of access and probably dispersed some hunters out to other properties or yep. pieces they weren't comfortable accessing
definitely
before.
Dispersed. So, definitely yeah. dispersed.
Yeah. Especially everybody just went to the same trailhead because it was marked. Here's the trailhead. But now, oh, I can actually park a mile down the road where the Forest Service touches the road and hike in up this ridge on an unmarked trail, unmarked trailhead, and cut everybody off an hour, you know, get in there an hour earlier and then people walking up the trail or whatever. But other ways to use it. So
more and more people parked alongside the highway during hunting season. Oh, yeah, there's one on the interstate just going over the Butte Pass. There's a guy pulled over.
And we'll hear it from, you know, our customers. There's folks who, you know, they have all this equity, all this time spent where they found these honey holes or access sites. And then where everything that's wrong with hunting, you know, we open this up to everyone else. But as you said, you still have to hike up the mountain. You still have to put a good shot on them. You have to find the animal. I mean, you still have to get it done. But what's funny is we get these guys saying we're the worst thing for hunting. We're opening up all this opportunity for everyone else. And then we look, and most likely, not always, they have our product.
Yeah.
And they're using it.
I'm 20% that guy and 80% the other guy.
Yeah.
But I occupy this. Like, I occupy that, or in every aspect of life, I, like, see both sides of stuff to a crippling degree.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, they spent time. They learned it. Yeah. You know, I would be frustrated as well. But it is satisfying. You know, antelope hunting, I went and hunted a place I had never been, found a couple pieces of state section that my cousin actually found because of our product, but I would have drove by it. I would have never looked at it and ended up having a couple goats on there and hunted for a morning and shot one. Never been there. You know, might not ever go back.
Yeah.
But
that's my experience. You got a silicone wedding ring?
Yeah.
Good man. Not going to get degloved.
No.
You know that's what it's called when your ring tears off your hand? Your skin?
Yeah. Oh,
it's degloved.
Degloved.
It's a great word, isn't it?
That's not why you wear it?
During hunting season, yeah.
To prevent it on.
Just it's more comfortable.
You don't want to get degloved, or you don't want to have a clicky noise when you grab something metallic? It's not fear of
a little bit of the both. Yeah. Shooting the gun. I do a lot of bird hunting, so.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah.
What's your ring made out of?
No ring.
You're not married?
Not married.
Really?
Yeah. No.
What's going on there? Any prospects?
Early.
Well, we'll put a plug in for you right now, man. We'll put a plug in.
We've done a lot of plugs. Nothing's ever come.
I don't know if anything ever comes of it. You want to put a plug in for yourself?
Phone number? I have a girlfriend at the moment.
Oh, okay. Well, let us know.
Zach's on Instagram.
Yeah.
Zach Sandow. Yeah.
There's a plug.
Because we just give your phone number where you tend to hang out and see what rolls. I'd love to hear that it worked. No one has a word for anyone.
On yet. X, 1925 Brooks.
He's there all day.
They can find me there in fall, maybe not. I've been traveling a lot there, so.
What's your wedding ring made out of?
It's a D-Glover. It's got gold and platinum.
Okay, it's all right.
It's a good idea, though, when you grab your bow, like click, like, oh, yeah. Man, get that.
I've got a tungsten one, because for regular season.
Don't wear that. Off
regular
when
season.
When you burn your hand or get degloved, they got to use a vice grip to snap it off. You have to crush it off.
Yeah, because it doesn't.
Can't cut it with a Dremel.
Can't cut it.
Yeah.
Oh. Telling you what, bro.
Maybe I won't put it back on.
This is like my mission in life, two missions in life. One, get people to switch to these. Yeah. And two, get people that have kids to keep their guns locked up and keep trigger locks on them.
Nope.
Save your finger skin. You got young kids?
5, 6, and 2, and one coming in the next 2 weeks.
All right.
Yeah.
And you got two.
Two kids, yep. Five and three.
Five and three. And I'm guessing you got none.
No kids.
Okay. Anything anyone wants to add? This has been a great conversation, man.
It's been fun.
It's funny because I've been watching it all, like watching it all, but not, you know, I mean, just like catching little. It'd be like if someone's watching a movie and you pass through the room now and then, and you start getting kind of like a basic layout of what's going on in the movie, but there's a lot you missed. It's filling in all those holes.
So we took on those investors, which we found great partners in growing the company and.
For world domination.
World domination. It's we're going to try to go big. We see a huge opportunity in the outdoor recreation space and a lot of potential there.
So if you're doing something in a city, you know, you use Google.
Yeah.
Restaurant, streets, directions. But if you're going in the outdoors, hiking, camping, hunting, fishing.
Yep.
It'll be on X.
Checking your properties, anything there.
Yep.
Where Google Maps ends. Onyx begins.
Ooh,
I like that.
Yeah,
good. I like that. But then I don't know if you want to have their name in there.
Yeah, true. That's just a.
Because someday you might be buying those guys.
That's true.
Yeah, any final thoughts?
Oh, man. Just thanks to all our customers and thanks to you guys for your support and really appreciate what you guys do. Excited for our partnership coming up.
Yeah, man.
Going forward, I mean.
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier with the final thoughts, and they're like, oh, man, we got to think some. But honestly, for me, it's like...
Like, you knew that a concluder was coming. Oh,
for sure. But for me, this is surreal because, I, you know, I grew up watching your show and everything, and be sitting here talking about it. Grew up using OnX, and it's great. And just seeing where we've come, really, not to play off Eric's, but it is our customers. You know, we get their feedback, both positive and negative. But we have, what, 13 or 10 customer service folks working in there?
Yep.
Taking parcel errors, answering questions, all that, you know, different ideas for features, whatever. But we listen to them all. We appreciate them all, even the bad ones. And it just helps us make it. You know, they're the boots on the ground for us.
Yeah. Has a customer ever had an idea where you're like, wow, that's a great idea?
Oh, I'm sure. Oh, yeah. I haven't had one specifically.
What's that?
I want to use this on my smartphone. Yeah. Can you make it?
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, it's been great and looking forward to the years to come.
What employee number were you?
I was 46.
So we got 1, 2, and 46?
Yeah.
I'm three.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. 1, 3, and 46. Yeah,
1, 3, and 46. And now we're, 100 right now.
Yeah. You got any concluders? And a brand spanking new CEO. That's public information.
Yep. It is. Awesome new CEO. Excited.
Any concluders?
Concluders. Yeah, you guys kind of nailed the customer. That was mine. But we've just been... super customer focused since the beginning. But I think the one thing I've learned is just how kind of precious our time is outdoors. So back to like, are we taking away from the woodsmanship? But, you know, everybody has such a busy life now with kids and families, and you go through different stages of your life. When I was in grad school, I could go hunting every day, every night, just check out of town and have a lot of time. But now as you have a family, time's more precious. So just using a tool or something like this just to really maximize your time in the field. We've just had a lot of success in helping people. You'd only have so many vacation days a year. You got to balance them between family vacations and going hunting and just helping people get out there, have that kind of 20 years of knowledge in 20 minutes, kind of like our internal slogan. Like you can go anywhere new, give people the knowledge to go to a new state, apply for new states, go explore and feel confident, have fun in the field. Not feel that pressure that they're going to be trespassing or have a landowner confront them or get in trouble from a game warden. You know, people are going out hunting to enjoy, spend time with their family and friends. So just super proud to have a product that helps people really enjoy their time in the field. So
yeah, it's got to be fun to work at a place like that, man.
Yeah.
We love hearing the stories. Keep them coming. I mean, that's what keeps us going. Our team goes really hard to make these products for people, and we get stories where guys are like, oh, I would have never had this experience if I hadn't had that product. And it just keeps us going hard and we love it. So keep them coming.
Yeah. We actually have like every 2 weeks we have a company get together and we read positive and negative every 2 weeks from a customer that we'll get in.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've enjoyed just reading the ones since we started working with you guys that we've got.
Yeah,
and then we forward them on to you guys.
And then we just send them through our Slack channel where all our employees can see them and they read them. So you guys send them to us and we just send them straight to everyone working on the product.
Oh, that's good.
I got an idea.
Is this your concluder?
Yeah. Okay. Because I'm at home and I'm on OnX. I'm like, man, that spot looks sweet. Sure, we'd like to go check out that spot. Ooh, look at that. Yeah. So what I need from you guys is like an app that sort of replaces me at work for a few hours and then at home. So that I have that time.
Yeah.
It's called OnX Work.
Yeah.
No, thank you guys for coming by.
Yeah, thank you guys. Yeah. We appreciate it.
Yeah, it was fun, man. You guys got to come back more often now that we're like neighbors.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
All right.
We'll do.
Can talk about maps. That was fun.
Yeah, and we got to interview 97 more employees.
Yeah.
Got to talk to our GIS team and learn about all the stuff they do. That's really cool.
No, I got a ton more questions, so let's parse it out.
All right, thanks, Steve.